This is ensemble member William Peterson, and you're listening to the Steppenwolf Theatre Company podcast.
I'm Associate Artistic Director David New, and I'm here talking today with Nicole Wiesner, who plays Mary Plunkett in Dublin Carol by Conor McPherson. How are you?
Good.
Good.
That's kind of funny. I never really took in Plunkett, Mary Plunkett.
Okay. Yeah. Because your father just calls you Mary in the production, John, right?
Yeah. But I guess it never occurred to me. I think a part of me in my mind thought she had her mother's last name. But, of course, she doesn't because the father is around for the first couple of years. So
yeah.
Mary Plunkett. All right.
So all of those people that you refer to thinking of you as a weird girl are saying that Mary Plunkett.
That Mary Plunkett.
She's an odd duck.
Yes.
So this is the second time, is that right, that you've acted in a Conor McPherson play?
Yes. I was lucky enough to do a production of Shining City at the Goodman that actually also moved to the Huntington Theater in Boston. And in both shows, I played the sole female in the cast, and I had one scene. Hmm. In Shining City, I come to meet my boyfriend, or my fiancé, I guess. I've just had his child, and he breaks up with me in the scene. And that scene started right off in the middle of he's just broken up with her, she's just found out, and so it was a pretty heated scene. And this is another scene, you know. I think Conor likes to write about women holding men accountable.
That's interesting, because sometimes there's no female characters, and when they do occur, it seems to be a sort of sole figure. Although the women who populate the lives of these men off stage are kind of vividly drawn by the playwright. I mean, we get a sense
right.
In Dublin Carol, we have a very clear picture of Helen, mm-hmm. your mother, and also Carol, the woman that he sort of had the relationship with after he left the family. And the women in The Seafarer, too, which we're getting ready to go into performances downstairs, too. Those women very vividly drawn in the lives of these men. And as you say, you know, holding them accountable.
Well, yeah, I guess when they do make it into the play, they really have an impact.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, in both scenes are very confrontive, but in different ways. I mean, Nessa and Mary are very much two different women with two different kind of life experiences. And they're both very strong women, and they're both very damaged women. And they've both come to get some answers, and you get the sense that they're both finally putting their foot down and saying, here I am, you have to talk to me, we have to really communicate about what's going on here.
Is it in both cases, I mean, there's a sense of confrontation, but there's also, it seems, a kind of olive branch or a kind of reaching out for a possible reconnection. I don't know if that's true in Shining City, but Mary is very complex in that, you say, right, I love you, I hate you too. All of that stuff is living inside. The past, both the kind of awful memories, but also the kind of really lovely memories. And this confronting and asking your father to sort of step up, but also a real desire to reconnect.
Yeah, I think both women in both plays are very needy, and they hide that neediness in different ways. I think in The Beauty of Dublin Carol, I mean, you really do. I think she comes in and she's pretty tough and she's trying to hold on to some power in this situation. And I think as the scene goes on, some of her defenses break down a little bit and some of this neediness does become very apparent. And in Shining City, it was a little different. I mean, the neediness was pretty obvious. They've just had a child and he is now leaving her. And I think she feels pretty devastated and pretty alone. So that was kind of really out there surface-wise. And playing this part, it's really been a challenge for me. You know, I come from a background of doing kind of experimental, avant-garde, over-the-top style of acting. So it's nice to kind of prove that I can do something else.
So what's the process? It's kind of clear, I think, when you're acting in a scene that is informed by an event that has just happened and that the immediate emotional response to it is living as the two characters exchange their expression and communication. In Mary, you know, the last time that she's seen her father was 10 years ago. So there's the recreation of the time between the last time you saw him and now. And interestingly, right, informed by the fact that you kind of imprint him onto some of these young men that you've been seeing. So he's been right with you even during that time you've been absent. But then all the way back to early childhood, both sad memories and kind of happy ones as well. How do you chart that as an actor? Is it something that you spend time outside of rehearsal just sort of imagining how alive those memories are in you, how much you carry them, how much you're reaching back for a memory the way we do?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think one of the things that we worked on for me early on in the process was I was tending to live the memories a little too much. I think I was tending to give them, my inclination was to give them a little too much flavor. Mm-hmm. And it was a kind of me and Amy sitting down and saying, okay, this is an old, old memory. And I don't think she's wearing the pain of that on her sleeve. She's kind of worked through that. And some of these memories are kind of, they're not even angry so much. I think some of it is just, this is what happened. And I want you to hear, even though I'm not necessarily living the pain of that right now, I want you to hear how this affected me as a child. Because I think if I really did go up there and lived every memory that we talk about to each other, as painful as it was when it happened, it would be a lot of crying on stage. It would be even darker play.
Yeah.
But so that was interesting of what kind of stuff has she worked through on a certain level. I mean, obviously the most pressing thing was, how is he going to deal with me right now? Is he going to go and do what I want with the mother? And so when we were working on it, there was a lot of questions of what exactly does she need right now, and then kind of the blueprint of some of these other memories that she tells. And
yeah, it's not why she's arrived, right? It's not to revisit the past,
right,
but rather to not only convey the news that your mother and his wife is in the hospital dying of cancer, but also you're asking him to go see her.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think there's a great sense of feeling like, you know, after her mother dies, she's going to be totally alone. And this is her only chance of kind of bringing the family together. And it's, you know, in some ways, it's a last shot deal. Dad, are you going to, or do you want to be a part of my life or not? And if you do, then you're going to have to take this first step. So it's interesting. I'm not sure that Mom really cared to see him or not.
It's interesting because as an audience member too, I think about the stories that we hear that John tells about his childhood and about, you know, seeing the violence, you know, visited upon his mother by his father, but more strikingly that he says, I couldn't defend her. So that the imprint on the child is, I'm someone who fails people. I'm someone who lets people down. I don't step up for people the way I should. And that's a pattern then that in adulthood he repeats. And that the stakes on this particular Christmas Eve are high because his wife is dying.
Mm-hmm.
And this is his last chance to not fail her,
right,
is to at least go to see her in the hospital and perhaps fulfill your request that he sort of somehow facilitate her funeral and burial.
I think that's one of the things that I did have to decide is, you know, at the very end she asks, will you do her funeral? And that was one of the things I had to decide is, do I intend to ask that question as soon as I walk out on stage? And I finally decided that I think it was that I don't, that it was more interesting if his admission of his childhood, I think that's a really pivotal part of that scene. And when he does kind of let her in on why he's so damaged, I think then the idea of him doing the funeral as kind of a gift or a you know, to extend the olive branch or what have you,
yeah,
I thought that was more interesting. And so that it was that she does decide right in that moment to give that to him. And he says no. So it's, you know, and you've done a lot of post-show discussions. I hear that's one of the biggest questions in the post-show discussions is, Does he stay and does Mary come back?
Yeah, and I have to say, you know, I guess I'm more of an optimist than a cynic, but I was kind of surprised that people questioned at all whether Mary would return or not. But I polled the audience, and regularly it's about half and half.
I was really surprised to hear that, too. I think she comes back. I can't imagine that she doesn't. She's gone through all of this. I don't think there's anything that shows me that she's strong enough to just say, no, I'm walking away. I think, you know, and that's a scary thing. I mean, I think that is something that she has to face too, is in some levels, is she going to become her mother or even Carol and kind of spend the rest of her life accommodating him and enabling him?
Yeah. I find so much in the scene that you have with him and the way that you play it to support the fact that she's making absolutely every effort to reconnect and to get him there. But I think it's interesting because, of course, the playwright and, you know, Amy Morton, the director, have left that intentionally open. And a woman said something really striking the other night in a post-show discussion. She said, there's no doubt in my mind that Mary is going to return. She said, I'm the child of an alcoholic, and we always return. We never give up hope that we'll be able to reconnect.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's informed by people's own past and outlook on life. But for goodness sake, it's a Christmas play. Can we just be a little off?
Absolutely. But I think some people would see her coming back as not as the pessimistic. And I have to hope, you know, the optimist in me has to hope that he does, that something does happen for him, that he does kind of reconnect with her on some level and that they can move forward from here.
That's my feeling. And it's, you know, it's, I don't think for either of them it's going to be an easy road or an instant transformation. But I feel like perhaps the first step has been made, which is, if nothing else, John sitting down, being still, and waiting.
Yeah.
Well, gosh, thanks so much. It was fantastic talking. And your
pleasure.
Your performance is just beautifully understated and etched just with such precision and fineness. It's really a joy to watch.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. It's really been a joy to work on and a challenge couldn't be happier, and the cast is fantastic, and Amy was great, even though she's in London. But we miss her, and we love her, and we're having a great time.
Excellent. Well, if you want to find out more information about Dublin Carol, you can visit the website at www.steppenwolf.org.
AT&T is the sponsor of online content at steppenwolf.org.